I'd like to ask everyone to have a seat, please. Hey, I do want to put my own plug in for the time that we come out here cheering the runners. It is really a pretty amazing experience. I know it's usually a little cold, and it's a little early for most of you, but we have a fantastic time. There's usually 22 plus thousand people that run back here on this street. And they really appreciate what we do. We not only have people out there cheering and we're ringing bells and making noise the whole time, we have a band on the porch of one of our houses here playing music. And people have come to know us. And I've heard from other runners that we're like the top two spot to run by because we're so enthusiastic and the music is so good. And really, it's kind of a strange, but it's really a God experience cheering on the runners and just being a part of what's going on there. So if you're thinking that's like for the birds, become a bird and fly over with us on that day. You won't regret it, really. Well, in 2005, I kind of started a periodic tradition during the Christmas time, and usually like this Sunday or the one before. And that is a reading of a children's book, actually, called The Tale of the Three Trees. I like it so much that when I was gone last year, Harry did it for a sermon so that we could make sure we didn't miss it. And you may be thinking, but isn't that a kid's story? Yes, but I love this story. And I've kind of made a little condensed version, just slightly condensed for us. And so what I want to do this morning, I'm going to read it to you. We'll have slides. There are pictures that are actually based on the book itself and the pictures that are in the book. And then I'd like to just share some reflections about the story, I think, and its kind of implications for our lives and for maybe how we see and approach, you know, Christmas time as well. So let's begin with the story. Once upon a mountaintop, three little trees stood and dreamed of what they wanted to become when they grew up. The first little tree looked up at the stars and said, "I want to hold treasure. I want to be covered with gold and filled with precious stones. I'll be the most beautiful treasure chest in the world." The second little tree looked out at the small stream trickling by on its way to the ocean. "I want to be traveling mighty waters and carrying powerful kings. I'll be the strongest ship in the world." The third little tree looked down into the valley below where busy men and women worked in a busy town. "I don't want to leave the mountaintop at all. I want to grow so tall that when people stop to look at me, they'll raise their eyes to heaven and think of God. I will be the tallest tree in the world." Years passed. The rain came, the sun shone, and the little trees grew tall. One day, three woodcutters climbed the mountain, and they cut down the three trees. The first tree rejoiced when the woodcutter brought her to a carpenter shop. But the carpenter fashioned the tree into a feed box for animals. The once beautiful tree was not covered with gold, not filled with treasure. She was coated with sawdust and filled with hay for hungry farm animals. The second tree smiled when the woodcutter took her to a shipyard. But no mighty sailing ship was made that day. Instead, the once strong tree was hammered and sawn into a simple fishing boat. She was too small and too weak to sail on an ocean or even a river. Instead, she was taken to a little lake. The third tree was confused when the woodcutter cut her into strong beams and left her in a lumberyard. "What happened?" the once tall tree wondered. "All I ever wanted was to stay on the mountaintop and point to God." Well, many, many days and nights passed. The three trees nearly forgot all their dreams. But one night, a golden starlight poured over the first tree as a young woman placed her newborn baby in the feed box. "I wish I could make a cradle for him," her husband whispered. The mother squeezed his hand and smiled as the starlight shone on the smooth and sturdy wood. "This manger is beautiful," she said. And suddenly, the first tree knew he was holding the greatest treasure in the world. One evening, a tired traveler and his friends crowded into the old fishing boat. The traveler fell asleep as the second tree quietly sailed out into the lake. Soon a thundering and thrashing storm arose. The little tree shuddered. She knew she did not have the strength to carry so many passengers safely through with the wind and the rain. The tired man awakened. He stood up, stretched out his hand, and said, "Peace." The storm stopped as quickly as it had begun. And suddenly, the second tree knew she was carrying the King of heaven and earth. One Friday morning, the third tree was startled when her beams were yanked from the forgotten woodpile. She flinched as she was carried through an angry, jeering crowd. She shuddered when soldiers nailed a man's hands to her. She felt ugly, harsh, and cruel. But on Sunday morning, when the sun rose and the earth trembled with joy beneath her, the third tree knew that God's love had changed everything. It had made the first tree beautiful. It had made the second tree strong. And every time people thought of the third tree, they would think of God. That was better than being the tallest tree in the world. You know, for me, I love this story because it really does play into my Christmas expectations. And really the way I find that I tend to actually experience life with God as compared to what I also often imagine or dream. And I thought this, we have to be careful that what we want doesn't cause us to miss what we have. And it's not that there's anything wrong with dreams, you know, or great expectations, but a lot of times that's not the way life goes, and it's not where we find God. It's in the life we actually find ourselves living that He is present and at work. And if we're not opening our eyes to where we are, to what we have, to what we're doing, we'll often find that we actually miss God in the process. You know, just thinking of just three of the incidents kind of surrounding the early days of Jesus, Matthew 1 mentions how, you know, Joseph was all ready to dismiss Mary and Jesus from his life. I mean, he was going to have nothing to do with it because her pregnancy didn't come about the way he expected it to, or probably by most people's standards, the way it should have happened. And so he was going to walk away from this thing that God was doing in his life. Maybe you remember it's in Luke chapter 7. You know, here John the Baptist was the great forerunner to the Messiah, the one who was called, given this special privilege to prepare the way for him. And as his ministry went on and he ended up in jail, he started thinking, did I waste my entire life? I mean, was I wrong? Was this guy not the Messiah after all? And here I've spent, you know, my adult life preparing the way for what isn't happening. And so from prison, he sends some of his followers to say, go ask him, are you the one that I was looking for? In the first chapter of John, chapter 1, Philip was called to follow Jesus. And immediately it says he ran and went to Nathanael to tell him, hey, we found the Messiah in Nazareth. And Nathanael's first response was, come on, can anything good come from Nazareth? You know, he had these expectations of where, if anything great was going to come, where it was going to come from. If God was going to do something amazing, this is how he would do it. This is where it would happen. And this is who would be involved. And so his first response is just to discount what seemed to actually be taking place rather than the way he thought it should work itself out. And I think this happens to maybe most of us, probably in life actually many times, but I know it happens to us in Christmas. How many years have you been saying, because I've been saying it, you know, it just didn't feel like Christmas. It's like, well, what is Christmas supposed to feel like anyway? And I think we all actually sort of have this idea, this kind of dream that maybe we experience, you know, a few times, maybe one time, and we've kind of locked in. This is what Christmas feels like. And we spent our whole life kind of seeking it, trying to recreate it, or maybe even reproduce it for others, you know, so our kids or grandkids, or our friends, you know, could feel, experience Christmas. I know for me, I know when my ideal Christmas was, and I've probably measured every Christmas against, you know, the rest of my life. And actually it had nothing to do with gifts or presents. But I remember I was 13, I was an altar boy. Anybody here ever been an altar boy? Yeah, a few of you guys. And so I got to participate as an altar boy in the midnight mass on Christmas Eve. And I remember having my cassock. It was a red cassock that you wore for Christmas with a white surplice, and it's really ironed and starch, really, in this big red bow tie that we wore. It was kind of like a, sort of like a bow tie, but it was a big ribbon bow. And it had been snowing that evening and was snowing just lightly. And our church was only a few blocks away, so I got to walk to church. And I can still picture it. I mean, to this day, what's this, you know, 46 years later, and I still can see this. Walking down the street, carrying that in a little plastic cover. Many of the houses were lit. In those days, everybody used the big colored lights, you know, not the little ones that we have now. Yeah, y'all remember that? And then this fantastic mass that we had, which you do a high mass during that day. And then coming home, and it's pretty late. I don't even remember what time. It's midnight mass. And my mom lets me stay up and makes me some tea, and I get to eat some of the Christmas cookies and probably go to bed around 1 in the morning. And then that next morning, me and my two brothers and two sisters, our bedroom was on the third floor. We're awake early, but my dad won't let us go downstairs until he makes sure Santa's not there. I realized later that was their way of sleeping in and not letting us get them up too early. And then the five of us running down the stairs, and all at once, we had our little piles, and all at the same time, man, ripping off the paper and taking off our gifts. And to me, that was Christmas. All of that package together. And I've been looking for it ever since. You know, for you, I don't know what made it not feel like Christmas to you, but I suspect for most of you, it didn't quite get it. Maybe because it didn't snow. Isn't it funny how something like snow, and what's that got to do with Jesus' birth? But if it doesn't snow, we're all like, this can't be Christmas. Really? Or maybe there are no small children in your life. And you know, it's just not as much fun as when you have little ones. But you know, even that doesn't always work. We were told for certain that my granddaughter, Selah, wanted this little stuffed poo doll because her mom is reading her the stories of Winnie the Pooh. Wouldn't you know, she actually wanted Piglet. But her mom didn't know that. It's like, you try, you know, you try. Maybe it didn't feel like Christmas because your family's far away. And part of your Christmas memories or traditions that kind of make it Christmas is being with family. Or maybe you're struggling with your family and you had to be with them because that's what you do at Christmas time. And it didn't feel like Christmas. And just the tension and the strain and, you know, just the effort you have to make. Maybe you're in a personal crisis. And it just doesn't feel like anything. We have some friends. It's funny, it didn't really bother me mostly till this morning, but John and Katie Wilhelm, who are vineyard pastors in Germany and then planted in San Antonio, although the church didn't make, but their son Eli, who's almost 23, ended up with stage 4 lymphoma and went through treatment and was cleared. And within 2 weeks, the cancer is back even worse than before. And today, actually last night, Eli decided, I'm not taking more treatment. They gave him a very slim chance of the treatment working. And so this morning, his parents are driving him to Fort Worth, where there's a campus ministry missions gathering, and that's where he had been planning to go all year. And he's going to go there, and he's going to have people pray for him. I don't know, does it feel like Christmas to him or to his parents? I doubt it. Maybe you don't have much money at all this year, and it's like, didn't feel like Christmas. There just wasn't much, you know, under the tree or much to give. Or maybe you have painful memories. It's been many, many years now. There was a family used to be in our church where the mom and wife was killed in a car accident on her way here on Christmas Eve. You know, I don't know, what does that do to your Christmases, you know, from that point on? But here's a couple questions. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. Is Christmas about the ideal circumstances, or is it discovering that Christ is present in our circumstances? I mean, didn't Jesus come into the real world of his day and his very presence changed things? Just the other day, Don and I went for a walk. Just there's a park right behind our house, and we noticed there was a car with its hood up. And so we kind of walked past and just sort of peeked in, and there was somebody in there. So I thought next time around, well, I better stop, you know, and ask them, you know, what's going on. Well, it turned into quite a story. And I met a guy who's an alcoholic. Got a lot of his life story, shared Jesus with him, prayed with him. Took a whole lot longer than I expected. And I never thought I would have a chance to share my faith and pray with a stranger that day. You know, that's probably one of the best things that happened in Christmas. Another question, is Christmas about becoming part of some great drama? And in some ways it isn't, that this great drama of God's appearing on earth, bringing salvation. But I'm thinking about like the drama we like to try to recreate every year with maybe, you know, our decorations and our gifts and food and family and all that stuff. And we try to make an event that somehow will feel Christmas. Is it about becoming part of some great drama or discovering that God has become part of our drama? I'm not usually one who does like a lot of acts of kindness for people, so I don't want you to get the wrong idea about me. But Don and I've had a long, long time friend who's pretty much shut in now. And when we had visited her like a week ago, we noticed the outside, you know, our trees hadn't been trimmed, bushes were a mess. So we decided we got all of our stuff, put it in the car. We didn't tell her because we knew she would not let us help her. And so we just went over and got our stuff out and just started trimming everything up, you know, and cleaning up. And I thought, well, we better tell her like before we go. And we had something for her. So Donna told her, and she came out and just cried. Just cried. Wanted to hug us and cry on us. It's like, I saw, see, God is present in the everyday drama of our lives. And that's what makes Christmas really special. It's discovering him in the real of our lives. It doesn't have to be like off the charts. It just has to be God present, revealing himself, because that is what Christmas is really all about. So I thought of just three things. How do we know when we've got Christmas, you know? I feel like I got Christmas more this year than I have in a long time. And yet, I would say in a good way, I've felt more and more quite indifferent to all the things that we normally do at Christmas. And we've done all of them. I put up the tree, decorated gifts under there, you know, did the lights and put up all our nativity. We did all this. We went and saw lights, you know, on houses, like over in River Oaks. Amazing what people did there. But I actually feel pretty indifferent to all that. It's nice. I'll probably do it next year too. But it's not where I discovered Jesus. It's not where I experienced the like profundity of God's presence in the world that Christmas really speaks about. So I thought, well, I think we know that we're getting it when we've made room for Christ to be in our lives on his terms. Just let him show himself as he wants to, where he wants to, in the way that he wants to. We all know Revelation 3:20, you know, listen, I stand at the door and knock. If any hear my voice and open the door, I'll come into their house and eat with them, and they will eat with me. Now it's like, just open the door. Create space. Be available and let him come in the way he wants to come in and do what he wants to do. And that got me thinking just a little bit, maybe an idea of how to like think about Christmas. You know, some of you might think this is goofy, but it might be good to think of Christmas like as a ritual. You know, even all the stuff you do. The whole idea of a ritual is you set up certain symbols and certain actions that you repeat each time in the hopes, and you don't know how it's going to work, you can't make anything come of it, in the hopes that in some way God will meet you in the space that you created. In some ways, the Lord's Supper is like that. We say pretty much the same words. We do the same thing. We only eat the bread and drink from the cup. We don't add fruit to the meal or, you know, nothing. And we create a space where God has an opportunity to meet us in it, to speak to us in it. And we don't know what he's going to say, what the experience will be like. Sometimes there's emotion. Sometimes there's not emotion. And maybe that's how we should think about like all the exterior things of Christmas. Just see it as you're setting the stage where something might happen. We don't know what. I can't control the outcome. I'm not going to be disappointed. I have no definite expectations, just that God could reveal himself. It's kind of like a spiritual discipline. You know, like spiritual disciplines like prayer and, you know, and reading the scripture or silence. I never know if I'm going to, like, quote, get anything out of it, but I do it. Because I know that in, like, reading scripture, praying, in solitude or silence, I'm creating a space where God might speak. I might learn. I might be changed in some way. And if I can't tell anything happened that time, that's okay. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to keep doing it all of my life. And maybe that's how we ought to view the stuff we do at Christmas. And then we might be more happy with what God does and how he reveals and shows up than disappointed because it didn't snow, you know? I think another way we can get Christmas is if we would take the time to recognize and appreciate the difference Christ is making in our lives. And that usually takes a little reflection. Because there's always tough things happening in most people's lives. Most of the time, there are hard things that are going on. But where have you seen change? How is your life different? Now, who maybe for this is the first time at Christmas you actually know Jesus? You actually know him. You've experienced his love. Has he restored some relationship or improved a relationship that's been struggling, you know, for years? Did you actually have a good time when you were with your family? For part of the time, maybe. So I think we'll get Christmas when we can recognize and appreciate just what difference Christ is making in our lives, instead of focusing on what we don't have yet, you know, what hasn't been done yet. And the third thing I would say, we'll know that we got Christmas when together with Christ, we're making some difference in other people's lives. You know, we can get so focused on, you know, did I get that old Christmas feeling, you know? And if I didn't, like, oh, bummer. Another Christmas, I missed the mark. Instead of knowing I helped someone, I spoke kindly to someone, I did something that blessed another person, that made a difference in their life, I could say, I'm getting Christmas. Because Christmas is all about God giving of himself for our good, for our sake, for the sake of the world. And if I get to be a part of that in any kind of way, then I know I'm getting it. I'm getting Christmas. And that brings joy. I mean, it brings tears of joy. Not only in doing it, but in telling about it. That's, you know, that's the Christmas that I'm looking for. And I would just say in closing, I think it's a pretty good approach to life, and not just Christmas. What we'd like to do is just approach Christmas just with a little specialty, the way we approach the whole of our life. And maybe for all of our life, we need to think more about what is God doing? Where is he at work? What difference has he made in my life, and is he making in my life, and how am I making a difference in other people's lives? Knowing that if I can land there, you know, on a regular basis, that God will be enriching my life. And like, what was that song we, first sermon from Advent Conspiracy from Johnny Mathis, is it called The Miracle of Christmas? You know, it's not about doing things at Christmas, it's the Christmas kind of things you do all year through. That's what we're aiming for. Making space for Jesus in our lives. Being grateful for what he's doing. Sharing him in some way, practical way, with others all the time. And then we'll find what we think we miss at Christmas, we're going to be getting through much of our life. And Christmas will be like an awesome crescendo of just kind of summarizing and celebrating what has been in our lives all along. Well, why don't you stand up? I'd like for the prayer team to come on up to the front. I should read these little stories more often. It's like so early. I probably, if you have children, I wouldn't get them till like 11:15. They'll be mad at you for taking them out of the stuff they're doing this morning. Well, these folks are here to be able to pray with you for whatever is going on in your life, wherever you need God to break in. You know, I don't know, it may be you just like somebody to rejoice with you in prayer of thanksgiving for how you're experiencing God and what's been happening in your life. Or it may be for disappointments. You know, I got through Christmas and unfortunately I'm glad it's over. You know, it was one of those kind of Christmases again. And I would just like to pray for God's kind of cleansing in my life and maybe give me a new start as we're coming into the new year to live life the way I really want to. But I think I'd get the most from God and make the most of my life. There could be a lot of really basic things. You're sick and you need healing. So whatever it is, in just a moment, I'll dismiss us. And if you'd come up and let these guys pray for you. Hey, since we're a little early, any of you feel like God gave you a word this morning for anyone? Or well, let me pray a blessing over you. And then you'll be free to go. And I guess the next time I'll probably see you will be next year. don't know, for me, this just feels like a holy moment. I just think God is present in a very real way, revealing his presence. And so just open your heart to experience him and to step towards him. I'll bless us. In the powerful and wonderful name of Jesus, I bless you. May the one who's come to earth come to you. May the one who made earth his home for a time make your heart his home for life. May you have grace to discover God in your life, what he's doing and what he desires from you and for you. The Lord is with you. Amen. Thank you, Steen. Hey, have a great week. Appreciate you guys. And please get prayer before you go. See you next week.